And welcome to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. We're going to start with some music from a Toronto artist named Nick Tian. And this song is from his album, These Little Things. And this is called Forest Nymph. And I thought Forest Nymph is appropriate for our show. Forest Nymph by Nick Tian.
I have been walking through these woods since time immemorial, and I've always been alone. You came in tripping over trees with leaves and hair and the hope that you'll never be alone. You're a space in time, like a flicker of a single candle flame. So don't dare just leave me behind. Some of these creatures are my friends. They pass and nod at me. Hello, this has always been my home. If you can live in woods like these, I'll teach you everything I know, and you'll never alone. Press your face to mine. Kiss me once, then never kiss another man. You've been raised to try changing me, but you won't tame me in the end. I'll be there, I'll be there through thick and thin. Just simply say, if you won't dare, just leave me behind. All this time, leave the lights low and dark. Stand beside and protect you from the agents of the
And that was Forest Nymph by Nick Tian. a Toronto artist, and that was from his album These Little Things, which I believe came out in 2019. Welcome back to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. We're very happy to be with you today on this October date. It's fall. The weather has gotten a little bit cooler now, which is more typical for this time of year. And if you're like me, you're out there sometimes visiting farms, local farms, to get the fall harvest, the fall produce. Squashes, of course, are big right now, and pumpkins. And there's quite a few farms that have pumpkin patches, and they do these kind of agro-tourism type things. And I interviewed somebody just a couple days ago from a farm called La Belle du Coteau du Lac, which is in Coteau du Lac, which is just off the island of Montreal, in the western part of the off-island part of Montreal, not far from places like Valleyfield and Laced and Saint-Lazare and so on. La Belle du Coteau du Lac currently has kind of a Halloween themed agro-tourism thing going on. And I was there a couple days ago, and you know, you could go through a corn maze and see all of this kind of Halloween haunted stuff, but you could also pick out pumpkins and different types of squashes, and some of them decorative, some of them more for eating. But really cool farm, which is also very well known for its raspberries, which it grows without pesticides. So I sat down with one of the farmers from this farm, or the main farmer from this farm, and his name is Marc-André Isabelle. And Marc-André is a graduate of McGill University's program Bioresource Engineering, which is more centered around the McDonald campus, which is out in St. Anne de Bellevue. And he actually does some teaching now in the Farm Management Technology Diploma program that McDonald campus has as well. But he was a graduate of Bioresource Engineering. So here is my interview with Marc-André Isabelle now. This is Ryan Young for Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm here with Marc-André Isabelle, who is a farmer involved with La Belle du Coteau du Lac, and also the farm that is called Ferme Isabelle. So tell me about how farming has existed in your history, in your personal family history.
So I was raised and grew up on the family farm, which at the beginning is a dairy farm that evolved over the year. We had a little bit of swine production, and then we refocused in dairy after I completed my degree at McGill. And then in 2015, we needed to diversify a little bit, since my brother and I were involved in the farm. So we started growing strawberry, which the first crop was planted in the fall of 2014. Started retailing at our roadside, at our farm market in Coteau du Lac. And then the first couple years we were strawberry only, and then in 2018 came in sweet corn and raspberry as well. And then we started agritourism at the same time, for the idea to try to provide an experience for people to come on the farm and to come and purchase the local produce. The produce we're growing all on our farmland. So basically a farm market, it's everything sold in it is produce that's grown on the family farm. Also, my sister is involved in that farm market, but she has her own business, but still grows all our fruit and vegetables on the original family farm.
So it goes back how far in your family history?
Actually, I'm fourth generation, so where our farm market is, it's a piece of land that was purchased by my great-grandfather almost 100 years ago. And then for most of the time, the backbone of the farm been dairy farm. And then, as I said, we did do a little bit of swine farming, and then we started in fruit and vegetable production, and we started retailing in 2015.
Yeah. And tell me about studying at McGill.
Since I'm a little kid, like, there's pictures of me in the around the tractors, the cows, or like a grain corn, and then I always wanted to be, no, I always wanted to know for the longest time I wanted to be farming back, and then I started the my diploma or FMT the FMT diploma, and 2003 to 2006, and then I did my bioresource engineering degree, which I graduated in 2010, and then came back full-time on the farm after that. Back when I was in the FMT, it was still about tractors and farming cash crops, corns and soybean and all that. And then now I'm managing more of a fruit and vegetable production than a cash crop side. So we do strawberry, raspberry, sweet corn, and I grow also in the agritourism side. We do have a whole bunch of activities. This year we had three main events. One of them was a flower festival that was centered around picking your own flower. We had over 80 different varieties of flower in that field. And then we have our sunflower festival starting at the end of August, where it's mostly focused on around the sunflower, where we almost have over 80 varieties as well of sunflowers of all colors, from the foot tall to the 12 footers, from the almost white to the almost black sunflowers, with every shades in between or almost. And then right now we have our Halloween event. Halloween's been part of our family for a very long time. It's one of my brother's project. He is an artist at the deep bottom of himself. He's a farmer, but he's very much of an artist, and he likes Halloween quite a bit. Always make like setting up different scenes for people to enjoy. So it started just from the driveway to the front house, from the front porch of the farmhouse, and then it kind of eventually grew into what we have right now. There's almost stuff to see for an hour and a half when we have the haunted house going on each side of the farm.
And what you were talking about doing cash cropping and doing more fruit and vegetable farming. What is the advantages or disadvantages of either of them?
Well, it's a very much a different mindset to do either a cash crop or a fruit and vegetable. Cash crop, it's more because you're growing a commodity. If I'm growing grain corn here in Côte d'Azur, or a farmer grows grain corn in central Iowa, grade 2 corn is grade 2 corn. That's exchange on Chicago Board of Trade, and there's no difference from my corn compared to the Iowa farmer. So it becomes the competition of who can grow the cheaper, makes the best margin, and then can buy or rent more land. So it's more of a large size. I don't like the term industrial size, industrial scale farming, but it's more of a larger size, larger equipment to grow as much crop as you can. Whereas the fruit and vegetable, we're more focused on retailing most of our production. Raspberries is about 90% retail at our farm store. Sweet corn is about the same. Strawberry is about 60 to 70% retail in our farm market. So it's more about focusing on quality of produce, and it's also, those are very labor intensive versus the cash crop, where it's more equipment intensive. So it's managing labor as well as managing your marketing and all that, because when your fridge are full of strawberry or sweet corn the morning of or the night of, you're not only a phone call away from selling a 1,000 ton of corn, where you have to make your marketing, your retailing, calling the grocers, enter a maintaining relationship with the grocers, and then your supply chains to sell your goods. So it's a complete different dynamic of maintaining that supply chain or that retailing chain versus the cash crop side of it.
So you prefer fruit and vegetable production, probably.
I like it. It's completely different mindset. I do like to create stuff like the agritourism. I like to grow and all these flowers and try to make different plots in the field for people to enjoy. Whereas the cash crop, it's more about managing like equipment. And yes, technology today is kind of overtaken it, where you need a certain size farm, which we don't have to afford these technologies. So we're still farming like we still grow grain corn for feeding our herd, but we still do the same technology that was back 20 years ago. Whereas my friend has larger farm, they've gone into that technology path. But it's a different mindset and different perspective to grow these. Like the possibility of stuff you could do is infinite in fruit and vegetables and flower farming. Like we really like where the people coming for agritourism. We don't even have like gravel roads set for people to drive on. I really like to do it in the fall. We erase everything, start a new planning, and plot something completely different for people to come and see the next year. Yes, they're walking maybe the same 20, 30 acres piece of land, but they're going to be walking it and seeing a completely different thing from one year to the other.
And was there anyone you turned to as an example of good agrotourism?
Yes, somebody very well known in the West Island, Phil Quinn from Quinn Farm, invited me to an agritourism convention, back the first one at winter 2018. That was in Los Angeles, where we went and see different farms, a different agritourism farm of different size, and then seeing how these people operate, help us shape our agritourism side of our business, and being able to accommodate for people coming in, because yes, the first year we'd maybe had like 50-100 people come in, and then last year in our sunflower event, that number got multiplied by over 10. So we were trained, and we had the knowledge from those convention that Phil Quinn invited us, being able to manage this amount of people coming to the farm and providing them an experience, because agritourism in the end is very much about providing an experience to people and try to have a connection back to farming.
And do you find that there is a real market here in the province of Quebec for that, and that there's lots of people that really enjoy coming to the farm?
Yes, we see it. Every year we have more and more people coming in. You talk to other agritourism farm, it's the same thing. The offer is growing as well. There's more people doing it. In the state, it's very big. In Quebec here, it's not the size of market that they have in the state. Like I said, typical thing when you go into the U.S. in the fall is going to pick your pumpkin to a pumpkin patch and a corn maze, and there's a variety of those in the U.S. And here we started to see more and more, and eventually people are falling for these kind of activities and enjoying it. The nice fall weekends when we have good weathers, you can enjoy and come and walk on the farm and pick your pumpkins or pick your flowers in the summer and so on. And where people is set up for picnics, other people have food offering and so on. So it's a diversifying market for people to have a different experience at different places.
And so if somebody wanted to come to your farm, where would they go? Where would they find the information, and what's the current thing you're having here?
Right now, what's going on is our Halloween event. We have the pumpkin patch for picking your pumpkins and a decorated corn maze in the day. And then that night, we have a haunted house with the animated corn maze. People can find us either on Facebook at La Belle Coteau du Lac, on Instagram as well under the same name. We also have a website where people can come and book their ticket to come to our activities at labelledecoteaudulac.com. And they'll find all the information about the different activities we have throughout the year, or the one currently going on.
Nice. And then over the years, what's some of the, you know, like I think I talked to you a bit about how environmental awareness has had an impact on farming in Quebec, and you went to school at McGill, and some of these issues may have been brought up at McGill. For you, what are some of the things that you've done at your farm to try and be better environmentally?
Yes, environmental awareness is a growing demand, and the customers come in to purchase produce here versus purchasing produce at a grocery store from wherever we don't know where they come from. So for that, we've done a number of things. The one I'm really excited about is our raspberry, which we are able to grow pesticide-free with different techniques, with netting and plastic umbrellas that protects the fruits from the environment, or the pests from the environment. So that one I'm really proud of. I've been able to do that in the last 3 years. Sweet corn as well. Corn borers is a big problem in sweet corn, so we're actually using predation against these corn borers. So it's basically a wasp that go and lay eggs in the corn borer eggs, and then the larva from the wasp eats the corn borer from the inside. So yes, it's cruel, it's very Halloweenish, but that's how the nature it works. So that one works perfectly fine, so we're able to cut down on insecticides, and actually we're not even using insecticides on our sweet corn with those techniques. We do have similar techniques for strawberry, although strawberry is a different challenge in terms of pesticide.
I guess it depends more on how wet the year is, right?
Yes, rain and moisture is the enemy, is the number one enemy. Normally when we have a wet year, it's a very disease intensive year, where the problem with disease is you have to protect the plant against the fungus or the pathogen that are coming in, whereas insects we can scout, and then we have a certain pressure, and then we can do a treatment to control it. That's a different mindset. So there's different techniques that are growing. I have one in mind that's using compost tea I've seen a couple years ago, but it's very, very labor intensive and time consuming. So I haven't had time to try it, but it's on my plan for in the near future to try to use some of those to reduce fungicide application in our strawberry.
And I know that you've had some teaching opportunities at McGill. Is this true?
Yes, I've been teaching the FMT program for the last 8 years, where I'm teaching farm machinery management courses and machinery and building maintenance courses. So it's kind of a funnier hobby because I'm talking about big tractors and equipment and how to prevent compaction from big equipment, but I've kind of not moved away from those. But as most of my friends that are in the cash crop, and they're buying bigger and bigger equipment every time they're buying a new one. And then I'm going and buying smaller and smaller equipment. Like last year, my friend bought a 36-row corn planter for growing I don't know how many thousands acres of corn. And I say, hey, I just bought a 2-row corn planter.
Classic. But do you enjoy that opportunity to speak to McGill students?
Yes, I really liked that teaching opportunity. It kind of changed the mindsets from the farm. And that's something I started before we did the fruit and vegetable. And I still want to continue and pursue it. And it's nice to have the kids coming in, and especially now we're back in class. So it's very nice to have that social connection with the students and have that kind of exchange, teaching them about different techniques we have on the farm.
And do you think being a farmer is a good thing to be during a pandemic?
Actually, I think COVID was a great thing for the local business. Yeah. And it's sad to say that it needed COVID to have people focus back on the local business. Because yes, they can have a $5,000 trip down south, but you can encourage awful a lot of business with $5,000 in your community. So there was, and you talked to a lot of these local business. I'm pretty sure they have similar experience, except maybe for the restaurants and things like this or the cultural venues. But for our kind of farms or local businesses like this, it's been good for us.
Your current farm and the land that you and your family own and that you farm, do you have any sort of future projects maybe coming down the pipeline, maybe?
We've focused a lot on developing and growing our agritourism side, because yes, with fruit and vegetable you can attract people from a certain distance, but when you're offering a different experience with agritourism, people are willing to drive a little bit from further away. So for our sunflowers, I've talked to people as far as Quebec City to come and see it, and even last night at our Halloween event there was a family from Joliet come and see our haunted house. So agritourism has that attraction a little bit more than just a standard fruit and vegetable farm. So we're focusing a lot on that. So this year we had a new event with the flower. We're going to concentrate on these three events for the coming future, trying to improve them, trying to attract more people to come and see them. And in terms of crop, I think I have enough on my plate with all these flowers and all that. Maybe different varieties within these crops as well.
And like, just as a farmer, what is the advantage? Like, you obviously like the lifestyle and you grew up with it, but is there things that you learn about the land and about nature and about managing things that you grow that enrich your life?
Well, farming, it's a unlimited source of findings and experience. So yes, when I was growing grain corn and soybeans and things like this, maybe that's maybe a little bit more limited, but it's more about technology, how to get more accurate applications in the field and so on, and trying to improve like a bushel here and there of more of yield. Whereas where I am now, it's more like the possibilities of growing, like with the sunflowers and the flowers, trying to do arrangement and things like this. And then the mindset I have now is if I make myself a picture in my mind in the winter of what I like the field to look like and try to replicate that in nature. So it's challenging. Mother Nature throws a lot of curveball at us, trying to navigate through these curveballs and try to make it to look the way I see it and try to make it enjoyable for the people to come. And every year, like, there's the different things. And even, like, when I manage the cash crop side of the farm for raising enough feed to feed our dairy herd, because we still have that one and still the backbone of our farm. And I try to have different crop rotation. And even for the first year, actually, this year, in one piece of land, one field, I managed to have three harvests in one calendar year. And not three cuts of hay, but three harvests of three different crops. So it's things like this I like to try and poach a little bit. And even that, with different type of crops being a little bit more environmentally friendly, like the big trend right now in cash crop is to have a lot of our soil covered at winter through either living crops or so on, moving away from, like, if we go back in the 90s, everybody was plowing, and then we went to some reduced tillage or conservation tillage. We try to keep more residues at the surface, and now we're talking more about keeping living crops at the surface of the soil. So we built healthier soils, stronger soils, and more resilient soils to the different curveballs that Mother Nature threw us. Like this year, like, we had droughts right off the start, and then July was awful wet and cold this year, and then it went crazy hot again in August. So we need resilient soil for our crops to be living through those and be productive for us at the end.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Marc-André, for speaking to me today.
Thanks a lot.
And that was my interview with Marc-André Isabelle from the farm La Belle de Coteau du Lac. If you are interested in checking out this farm, you can visit their website, which is labelledecoteaudulac.com. And they're also on Facebook. They're easily found on Facebook. Their website is, I think, almost entirely in French, but it's easy to figure out how to reserve for their festive Halloween, and also for any of their other events, or to buy products and so on. So check it out at labelledecoteaudulac.com. You are listening to Ecolibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. We're going to play some more music from Nick Tian, and this is the song Strip Mall City from the album Canadiana Compilation Volume 1, and that was just released this year. So this is Strip Mall City.
So the factories are gone, the old folks are moving on. The deer from Samax Grove disappeared without a yawn. And where do we go now, without a single field to plow? No industries, no apple trees, no blue bus stops downtown. And I found my heart in that silly little strip mall city many, many years ago. And each time I come back, it's like my childhood's been attacked. What happened to that little town I used to know? We're always better, or so I thought, than all those other places where houses squished together and filled with dull commuter faces. I guess that folks prefer 20 copies of the same drugstore. I don't know why the hell I care. I don't even live there anymore. But I my heart in that silly little strip mall city, where lumber trains would stop the traffic in the core. And each time I come back, it's like my childhood's been attacked. I wonder if it's really any different than before. Thank you. guess what I remember best was biking by the power lines, the parks where we would play as kids and as teenagers, where we'd get high, we'd walk King Street from end to end. We were 16, but damn it, we were men. And it all comes back so fondly now. I wasn't all that happy then, but I found my heart in that silly little strip mall city many, many years ago. Each time I come back, it's like my childhood's been attacked. What happened to that little town I used to know? And I found my heart in that silly little strip mall city, lying on my backyard lawn. But each time I come back, it's like my childhood's been attacked, and all the places I love most are gone.
And that was Strip Mall City by Nick Tien from the album Canadiana Compilation Volume 1, which was released this year. I really like that artist, Nick Tien. He's interesting, very interesting. So we're going to now feature a story from Democracy Now! And just recently, over 530 people were arrested in a historic Indigenous-led climate protest in Washington, D.C. So basically, many of these protesters occupied the offices of the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington, D.C. And I think it's the first time they've occupied, or people have occupied, these offices since the 1970s. And one of the key people that's interviewed by Amy Goodman in this story is Siknik Mopin, who is a sovereign Inupiat from the Arctic, who traveled all the way from Alaska to this protest in Washington, D.C., and was among those arrested during this occupation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington, D.C. So let's hear that story now from Democracy Now!
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Washington, D.C., where over 530 climate activists have been arrested in a historic week of civil disobedience, calling on President Biden to declare a climate emergency and stop approving fossil fuel projects. The Indigenous-led protests have been part of a mobilization dubbed People versus Fossil Fuels. On Thursday, Indigenous activists occupied the Bureau of Indian Affairs for the first time since the 1970s. Indigenous leaders issued a series of demands, including the abolition of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, restoration of 110 million acres of land taken away from Native nations, the return of Indigenous children buried at residential schools, and no new leases for oil and gas or extractive industries on public lands. 55 people involved in the takeover were arrested. Indigenous activists have also been leading daily acts of civil disobedience outside the White House. This is a member of the Red Lakes in Minnesota speaking Monday.
We are the voice of the animals. We are the voice of the trees, because they don't have the voice. Creator to us gave us stewardship over the land, so that's what we're doing. We are fighting for clean water, for future generations, for Mother Earth, for the world.
Indigenous youth activists are scheduled to lead a march to the U.S. Capitol today. This week's protests in D.C. come just weeks before the start of the critical U.N. climate summit in Glasgow, Scotland. CNN's reporting President Biden's planning to attend along with 13 cabinet members in the first week. But U.S. climate envoy John Kerry's already admitting the talks will likely fail to reach a global target on cutting greenhouse gas emissions. During a protest outside the White House Monday, Joy Braun of the Indigenous Environmental Network called on President Biden to uphold promises made to Indigenous communities.
You need to be held accountable. You made promises to the Indigenous communities across this land that you were going to uphold, but you haven't upheld those promises. You've been speaking with a forked tongue, just like that one that was before you.
That was Joy Braun speaking Monday outside the White House. She's joining us now in Washington. She's a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe and a frontline community organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network. She was deeply involved in the Standing Rock protest to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we're joined by Sikanik Malpin, the executive director of Sovereign Utopia for a Living Arctic. She lives in Fairbanks, Alaska. She was arrested yesterday during the occupation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and that's where we're going to begin. Sikanik, can you talk about this protest? We didn't know if we'd have you on the show today because we didn't know if you were going to be getting out of jail, but we got word last night that you were.
Yes. We had gathered to let Biden know that we're not going anywhere. Signing petitions and giving them and following these laws have not gotten us where we need to be. There is a climate emergency. People are dying right now. And we needed to make a statement, and I think that we did.
So talk about what you're demanding of the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
The BIA was created to erase Indigenous people. It has always been against us. And today, or yesterday, and every day, we demand that it be abolished. We do not need a blood quantum to say how Indigenous we are or to qualify that. We know our Indigenous ways to protect this land, this earth, this water, and we understand that the earth is unbalanced, and we do not have time for negotiations, for compromises. We need to take this serious and take action now.
Can you talk about what happened in August when your group, along with others, were able to get the U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason to throw out the approvals of a major oil project in your state of Alaska?
Yes, that was a extraordinary time, considering during the heart of the pandemic in 2020, the Bureau of Land Management decided to hold the hearings for opening the Willow Master Project located outside of Nooksit, where my mother lives and my family is from. And we heard testimony from tribal administrators, corporation presidents, Native corporation presidents begging the Bureau of Land Management to stop these hearings until the pandemic was over, until we got it under control. And they quite literally did not listen. You can just hear sobbing. And they continued on. They made the record of decision. And it felt a little hopeless, especially with Biden's approval of this project, even though he promised he was going to take the climate crisis serious. So having the Ninth Circuit overthrow this was such a big win, especially when the corruption is so rampant within our government.
Can you talk about specifically your action yesterday? I think it was reported some 55 water protectors were arrested and taken from the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And to talk about how significant this is, the last time it was occupied was by Native Americans in the 1970s. November 3rd, 1972, a group of 500 American Indians with the American Indian Movement took over the interior building. The culmination of a cross-country journey in that was called the Trail of Broken Treaties, intended to bring attention to Native American issues such as living standards and treaty rights. Why did you focus on the BIA? Are you calling for it to be disbanded?
Yes, and we wanted to make a statement that we are still here. We have been fighting against the genocide of our people, colonization since contact, and we are not going away. We came with matriarchs that led us, and that was, I think, a powerful statement to have our women come in front again and to lead us into that building. I followed their guidance, and we were able to, again, make a statement. At the BIA, organization created to quite literally erase us from this place, this earth, with blood quantum. We do demand the abolishment of BIA and to also say that Indigenous people have always been the caretakers of this land. We will continue to be the caretakers.
I want to bring Joy Braun into this conversation, a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, frontline community organizer with Indigenous Environmental Network, which organized this week of historic protest. I dare say, with President Biden now saying he and 13 members of his cabinet are going to go to the UN climate summit in Glasgow may well be a result of what you all have done this week right outside the White House. We last talked to you, Joy, at the standoff at Standing Rock. Can you talk about the organizing of this week, what's happened, and what you want to see come out of it? You, along with over 500 people like Sikkenik, have been arrested.
Hi, it's good to be on the show again and to see you today. Well, I certainly hope that President Biden is listening. You know, the United States government brought the front lines to us, to the indigenous people, to our doorsteps, and we wanted to bring the front lines to his doorstep to let him see that we are very serious about climate change and declaring a climate emergency. People versus Fossil Fuels came out of Build Back Fossil Free, a coalition of over 200 frontline organizations around the United States that came together and said, we're not being heard. We're not being listened to. And we have to unite. We need to unite together to let this administration know that we are serious. And, you know, we're tired. We go to all the hearings. We do the petitions. We make the phone calls. And it's not working. They're still allowing pipelines to go through illegally. Dakota Access Pipeline is still an illegal pipeline. And, of course, they did not do a full EIS on Line 3. And they're ignoring treaty rights on Line 5 and Mountain Valley Pipeline.
Joy, these protests are historic. You knew people who back in the 1970s were part of that AIM takeover, the American Indian Movement takeover of the Bureau of Indian Affairs?
I was a little kid back in the 1970s, maybe 3 years old. So I was just a toddler at that time. But we definitely heard about those times. And we did have elders with us this week who were part of that particular movement in the 70s. What happened this time again was organic. There was no leadership. It was just the people saying that we need to go and make a statement that the Bureau of Indian Affairs has, you know, it only was designed to eliminate us, like my new daughter, because we like to adopt children, like my new daughter, Sikkenik, has said. We need to erase blood quantum. What other people in the world must still carry a card saying what percentage of blood you are, like a horse or a dog? I mean, that's crazy. So, plus that, you know, the DOI did give 2,500 new oil and gas leases on BLM property when President Biden said, oh, we're going to stop all new leases, but then opens it back up and then also threatens the Arctic with new leases and the Gulf Coast, of course, with new leases and new LNG projects.
Can you describe some of the other actions, Joy, that have been taking place in Washington? For example, the Andrew Jackson statue in Lafayette Park across the street from the White House was the words, "Expect us," were written across it. What did that mean?
Well, it came out of "respect us" or "expect us." And that is a saying that was said, geez, many, many times over the years during the fight from the 1970s and the 80s and the 90s. It was something that one of my mentors, Deb Whiteplume, used to say. And, of course, I said it at Standing Rock when we were at treaty camp. But I woke up, like many people, and saw the redecoration of that statue. Jackson was the one that caused mass genocide to indigenous people. I mean, tens of thousands of indigenous people died at his hands. And, of course, started the Trail of Tears for many tribes, including the Cherokee.
Earlier this week, protesters climbed a flagpole outside the Army Corps of Engineers office demanding a stop to the Line 3 crude oil pipeline.
Yes, yes, I was there. Two flagpoles were climbed by indigenous activists, and the flags were, became coup presents. We kind of grabbed and nabbed them, but, you know, that's kind of something that we would have done if we were in battle. We'd like to go grab the enemy's flag. So that's what happened.
Yet at the same time, you have the first indigenous, the first Native American cabinet member to be named under, and this was under President Biden, Deb Haaland, who is a former Congress member from New Mexico. She is the Interior Secretary. Now, according to AP, she was not in the Interior Department's building where the BIA is, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, on Thursday. But can you talk about her role and if you've had conversations with her?
Well, of course, different organizations have been trying to reach out to who we call Auntie Deb. We love Auntie Deb. Make no doubt about it. We love Auntie Deb. We love that she was appointed by President Biden. We love that she's been able to get some really good positive work done. However, her hands have been tied by the Biden administration when it comes to climate change. Like I said, the DOI allowed 2,500 new oil and gas leases. When President Biden could have said, we're going to stop them and we're not going to allow this to happen. In order for us to truly make a climate change in the world, in order for us to say, hey, we are leaders in climate, then we must stop all new oil and gas infrastructure, especially on public lands. And unfortunately, Auntie Deb hasn't been able to do those types of things because her hands are tied by the Biden administration's policies. So we love Auntie Deb. She's doing an amazing job. We're really, really proud of her. But President Biden needs to be held accountable for not following through.
Sikinik Mopin, we're giving you the last word. You came down from Alaska, a leading indigenous rights activist at your young age. What do you take away from this week?
I take away knowing that this is not an isolated incident in Alaska where children are getting cancer, asthma. We are seeing our caribou with black bone marrow, with mold on our fish, and we come to our relatives, and the same things are happening in communities all over the world, and we are saying enough is enough, and standing with leadership with no leader, but an entire group of an indigenous peoples and allies that are saying, expect us, because we have not been respected.
We thank you both for being with us. Sikinik Mopin is the executive director of the Sovereign Inupiat for the Living Arctic, and Joy Braun, member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, a frontline community organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network, which has organized this historic civil disobedience in Washington that have lasted throughout the week. At this point, over 530 people have been arrested.
And that was a story from Democracy Now! About the over 500 climate activists that led a indigenous civil disobedience action in Washington, D.C. at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. That story featured interviews with Sikinik Mopin and Joy Braun. Joy Braun being from the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe and the Indigenous Environmental Network. You can find out more by going to democracynow.org. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. We're basically out of time, so we're going to leave you with some music. But first, we'll give you some information. Equilibrium, of course, is a show here on CKUT 90.3 FM that features environmental stories, environmental issues, being covered, interviews with people about environmental issues, interviews with environmentalists, interviews with farmers, like today at the beginning of the show. And so if you are a fan of the show, then like our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/EcoLibriumCKUTMontreal. And you can follow our page that way. And we do have a website, which is equilibriumradio.weebly.com. And we also have a podcast, a related podcast, which you can find at equilibrium.podbean.com. And you can find it on Spotify by looking for the Equilibrium Radio podcast. There's also a podcast on Spotify, which is just called the Equilibrium Podcast. But that's not our one. Our one is called the Equilibrium Radio Podcast. All right, so you can find it on Spotify. And and if you want to email us, you can email us at equilibrium@ckut.ca. And my name is Ryan Young, and I will see your email there if you email me or if you email the show. And we're always interested in hearing from our listeners and hearing any kind of suggestions for guests or what have you, and, things to cover and so on. So thanks for listening to today's show. And we're going to leave you with some music from Childish Gambino. And that is the tune Redbone. Childish Gambino, of course, is a guy that's also, his real name is Donald Glover. Donald Glover Jr. He is an American actor, comedian, singer, rapper, producer, writer, and director. And I find this song is a lot like the old funkadelic tunes from the 70s. So I love it. So this is Redbone. Enjoy.
Whose data? Our data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Coombit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at coombit.org or email at info@coombit.org. That's K-O-U-M-B-I-T. We are not on Facebook.
The Association des Services de Réhabilitation Sociale du Québec is filing a class action suit. If you were strip searched between July 13, 2006 and July 1, 2011, if you were in one of the following facilities, Bordeaux, Rivière-des-Prairies, Roberval, Saint-Jérôme, or the male sector of Quebec City, you may be able to be part of this claim. For complete details, go to asrsq.ca/class action. That's asrsq.ca/class action. Claims must be filed before January 16th, 2022.
Dos à dos, face à face, donnez-vous la main et changez de place. Dos à dos, face à face, donnez-vous la main et changez de place. Dos à dos, face à face, donnez-vous la main et changez de place.
Il y a des enfants qui aimeraient changer de place pour de vrai. Isolement, regard triste, changement de comportement, baisse de concentration, trouble du sommeil, baisse de l'estime. Il y a des signes lorsque ça va pas bien. Soyons attentifs. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Les infirmières prennent soin des patients avec cœur et dévouement. Aujourd'hui, c'est à notre tour de prendre soin de ces professionnels en valorisant leurs compétences et en assurant rapidement un meilleur équilibre entre travail et vie familiale. C'est également l'occasion pour les personnes qui ont quitté le réseau public de revenir prêter main forte avec de meilleures conditions. Plus que jamais, nous avons besoin d'elles pour améliorer la vie des patients. Pour en connaître davantage sur notre plan d'action, rendez-vous à québec.ca/infirmière. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Sam's excited to see his favorite band play live. He's thought about it all week. He bought his ticket. He wore his band t-shirt. He went to the concert venue. He wasn't allowed inside the concert venue. He put away his band t-shirt. He threw away his ticket. And he thought about it all week.
Feel the beat! Feel the beat!
Wait a minute, that's too fast.
Now what?
Kick it over here, baby pop!
CKUT, yo, yo, this is for your mind, soul, and spirit. Plus your positive vibes, masters at work, you gotta hear it. And West Indian rhythms on Saturday night. Roots, rock, reggae, I keep it tight. Manchild, hitting switches, keep it right. The cypher on a Friday, Psalms of soul, I do it my way. With ill groove on Sunday, I gotta say one way. We stick together, it's for unity in the community. On CKUT at 90.3, Manchild and John Fish. We give you that musical wish to put more music in that dish. So listen to your radio station and simply turn it on. CKUT, word is born. Y'all enjoy yourselves. Love you, Montreal. Tune in to CKUT.